You're making your way, if you will, to the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 6. I'd like to spend some time working a text there this morning, Deuteronomy chapter 6. While you're going there, just a quick reminder that at 4 o'clock today, there's going to be a training class for our young men who participate in that devotion we do once a month at 4:30. It's designed to help them prepare to lead public worship. And this class is just kind of a refresher for all the things that we taught them about 18 months ago. And so if you have a son that's been doing that, or if you have a son who can read and would like to start doing that, we would love to have him join us along with one of you, mom or dad, at that session today. I just think such an important part what we do as a church family, getting our young men ready to lead and serve in that way. 4 o'clock this afternoon. Back in May, I was in Tampa. Back in December, that will be important. I was in Tampa celebrating Christmas. Now you know why it couldn't be May. With my grandkids and the people who take care of them, and grandparents were laughing at that, I know. And while we were together, I was talking to my son about the fact that his little girl, my oldest grandchild, is going to be 7 in May, and now you know where May came from. And so I told him that since she was getting close to that age when kids get cell phones, that I had decided for her 7th birthday, I was going to buy her a cell phone and put her on my plan. Quit judging me. It was a joke. I was just messing with him, okay? That's all it was. But I did enjoy his reaction to that. And actually what it did is it sparked a really interesting conversation about kids and cell phones. And at one point in that conversation, my son said this to me. I'm going to put it on the slide because I want it to stick with you the way it stuck with me. He said, everyone agrees there's a problem with kids and cell phones, right? Do y'all agree with that? Nod your heads up and down. You with me on that, right? Yeah. There is a problem with kids and cell phones. But he said, no one's doing anything about it. And that was his complaint as he's laying out his strategy for what he plans to do with his kids about cell phones. Everyone agrees there's a problem, but nobody's doing anything about it. Nobody really changes the way they handle that. We just kind of float along with culture and do what everyone else is doing in their family with their kids and cell phones. And I got to thinking about that. That how often that is true, and not just about cell phones. That we all see these problems and these challenges out there, and yet for some reason, we just sort of gripe about them. We're good at that. But we don't really, let me describe it this way, get outside the cultural box and decide we're going to do something different at our house, because we don't want to do just what everyone else is doing. So, man, that's really stuck with me. And I've been thinking about that over the last few weeks. And really, that's what kind of gave birth to the lesson that I would like to share with you today. I have entitled it Straight Talk About Our Kids. And if you get this sense that that means this lesson may be a little starchy, you are right on track. Because sometimes we need to talk straight about what's going on with our kids. And so since that's going to happen this morning, can I tell you where that's coming from? I want you to understand that. I want to put this underneath everything else that I say. I love these kids. I've been working with young people my whole life. And it's been my good pleasure for almost 4 years now to work with these guys, especially the older ones. I've spent a lot of time teaching class and have gotten connected with them. I love these kids just like you love your kids. And you know what I want for them? I want them to go to heaven. I'm really not hung up about where they go to college or what they choose to do for a living. I've hung out with some guys that were CEOs, and I've hung out with some guys that threw trash for a living, and they love the Lord and they serve them. That's all I care about. It's helping these kids serve the Lord. And I think we're living in a time where we have challenges in front of us, and I am fearful about that, and I know you're fearful about that, and sometimes I think we just need to talk straight about that, and I'd like to do that today. And encourage us to get outside the cultural box, not to just complain this morning, but acknowledge the problems, and as my son said, do something about it. So I have some topics in mind when I say that to you. Let me mention a few of those this morning. First of all, I think we've got to do something about the atmosphere at home. Can we start there? Because in too many homes, the atmosphere of home is cluttered by a bunch of stuff that just doesn't matter and not by the right stuff. So to set this up, I invited you to Deuteronomy chapter 6 because I am convinced in Deuteronomy chapter 6, Moses is concerned about that too. Now, before we look at what Moses said, I want you to think with me for a moment about the atmosphere of your house. I want you to pause for a minute and think about what fills the atmosphere at your house. Will you think about that? Because from the time we get up in the morning, and in my house have coffee to get functional, right? From that time all the way to the time that we close the door and we go to bed, there's conversation going on all the time, right? So will you think about what that conversation sounds like, what the topics are, what we're talking about all the time? And it's not just the conversation, because my home is loaded with devices. How about yours? We got TVs, we got computers, got iPads, we got phones, we got all kinds of devices, and they're helping to fill the atmosphere at our house. How about your house? So the TV's on and there's a show playing back there, or somebody's listening to some music on the phone, or we're sitting down and we're looking at a YouTube video on the computer. Let me ask you, what is that? What's that video? What's that TV show? What's the message? What's being said? And then there's not even peace when you get in the car. What do y'all do when you get in the car and go somewhere? What you doing on the way to church this morning? You all just sat in stone silence till you got here, right? That didn't happen. Maybe you talk to each other. What was that about? What was that conversation? Or maybe when you're driving to work, you're listening to a podcast. That's what I do driving back and forth to work. Or maybe you choose to listen to music. What's the podcast about? What's the music? What do you listen to? What's the message of the song? And then there's the other stuff in the atmosphere of our house that's a little more private or even secret. You know, sometimes literally the atmosphere of your house, you could get some kind of toxic gas in there that's even life-threatening, right? So in my house, I have a CO2 detector. So I can know, can't smell that stuff, you can't see it. But I got a device that says, hey, that toxic stuff is there. You got any toxic stuff in your house? Maybe what someone's looking at on their phone after everybody else has gone to bed at night. Might be a good idea periodically to just listen. Just step out of all the conversation and the noise and just listen to what the kids are watching on TV or what the song is that they want to play in the car. What fills the atmosphere at your house? In Deuteronomy chapter 6, I mentioned a minute ago, I think Moses is concerned about that. I'm actually going to come back to this text several times this morning. So I want to read the first part of this chapter to you, just so you have the whole thing all together at one time. So chapter 6, verse 1, Moses writes and says, now this is the commandment, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you. you, that you might do them in the land where you are going over to possess it, so that you and your son and your grandson might fear the Lord your God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Oh, Israel, you should listen. And be careful to do it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. Watch verse 7. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. It's in verse number seven that I think he talks about atmosphere. Do you see it there? What do you talk about when you sit in your house? What do you talk about when you guys walk off to go somewhere? What do you talk about when you get up in the morning and when you go to bed at night? I tell you what Moses sees. Moses sees opportunity in all of that. Moses says, what you need to do when you get up in the morning is talk about covenant. This covenant we have with Jehovah. And when you're sitting around the house, bring the conversation around to the covenant and the terms of the covenant and this relationship we have with God. Listen to him. Let it fill the atmosphere of your house. Put something on the fridge about it. That's what we would say about verse number 9, right? I suspect that if I took the poll this morning and said, how many of you think it would be a good idea when you're sitting around the house sometimes to turn off the TV and like read from the prophets? Or when you're driving your kids to school, if you drop them off at school, along the way, be ready with a spiritual thought or admonition that'll help them through the school day. How about before we leave the house in the morning, to pause and have a moment to think about our relationship with God or how important that is. And before we go to bed at night, to have those quiet moments by the bed where we rehearse the day and intertwine God with the day. I bet if I ask you this morning, how many of y'all believe that was an important thing to do? I think it would be 100%. Like everybody would say that. And I bet a huge majority of us would add, we need to do that more at our house. Do you see? We already know what the problem is. My son was right. We just don't do anything about it. So here's what I hope this morning. I hope that will bother you a little bit for the next day or so. Enough maybe to ponder what you could do. And as we think about the doing, can I just talk to dads for a minute? You know, I think we've understood clearly that dads are God's appointed spiritual leaders in the home. That doesn't mean moms don't do anything spiritual. I'm not saying that. But dad is appointed as the point man in this. So I want to challenge dads. Will you take note of the atmosphere at your house? Listen. What are we talking about and watching and listening to? And what's the message of the music and all that stuff? And to think like Moses wants us to think, what are the opportunities here for me to bring our relationship with God into that equation? Maybe what dads need to do is be more of the initiator for those kinds of spiritual activities in the home. Maybe get some prophets reading going. In 2024. Someone says, are you just going to harangue about that all day? Yep, probably so. Get us all reading in the prophets this year. Let's stop complaining and agreeing that there's a problem. Need to do something about that. Okay. That's the first thing. The second one is going to be a little more dicey. Y'all ready for this? A second challenge, I think, is to deal with this problem. The fact that we care too much about sports. Oh, yeah, I know he went there. But we do, right? Has any of that atmosphere at your house had sports in it the last month? Because we just did the college football playoff. A lot of people were griping about how that went, except for Mark and except for the end. And now we're getting ready for the Super Bowl, which was important to the Texas people until last week, right? And then in just a few weeks, the real sports season starts because pitchers and catchers report at the training camp, right? And baseball starts. We're sports people. And then when our kids do it, oh, listen, my kids played. I know. We get consumed with that. But in fairness, folks, it isn't just sports. That's one problem. I could have put up there that we care too much, ready for this, we care too much about band, too, and color guard. And we care too much about theater and drama. In fact, pretty much anything our kids get excited about, especially if it's competitive, where they get to go and beat other people's kids. We get really consumed with that. In fact, since I'm dangling over the edge of the cliff, can I just jump off this morning? We care too much about academics. We care too much about test scores and SATs and college prep. And now you're thinking, David has lost his mind. Academics, yeah, I'm with him on the sports thing, but academics are important. Let me tell you what, I know you agree with me about this. Because it's Sunday morning early and you're sitting in a church building. Here's why I say that we care too much about this stuff. Can I just give it to you straight up? This is straight talk today, right? So here's the straight talk about this. We care too much because our kids are going to die. Like all of us. And you can't properly figure out life until that has been factored into the equation. We can't live like death doesn't happen. It does. For all of us. So here's my question. What will matter to us when our kids die? I have never attended a funeral where someone says, let me tell you about this guy's SAT scores. I've never gone to a funeral where there was a display with all of his youth baseball trophies out there. We all know the thing that matters when we die is Jesus. And have I nurtured a relationship with him? Have I lived out that relationship over the course of my life? We already know the thing that really matters. Here's the point. If that's what matters when we die, brothers and sisters, that's what needs to matter now. So looking back to Deuteronomy 6, do you see it there? Deuteronomy 6, look at verse 5. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. Nothing more important than that. And then verse 6, have his words on your heart. And then if you back up, the start of this chapter is all about doing. Verse 6, that you might do the commandments and the statutes of in the land you are going over to possess. Verse 2, to keep his commandments and statutes. Verse 3, O Israel, you should listen and be careful to do it. Do you see it? It's the relationship and it's the living of the relationship. That's what matters, folks. And so then it's from that point he launches into make this the atmosphere that fills your house. Why does this need to be what life in my house is all about? Because at the end of the day, it is the only thing that matters, isn't it? I told you we would agree about this. Our struggle is the Mary and Martha struggle from Luke chapter 10. Do y'all remember that story of Mary and Martha? Jesus is visiting in their home, and Martha's doing what I would do. Jesus is at my house. Everything has to be perfect. And Martha's scurrying around, getting everything just right. And after a while, and I think I would do this too, she starts looking around and she says, "Where is Mary? Why isn't she helping me?" Now, I don't understand the next part, because she goes up to Jesus and she says, "Would you get my sister to get over here and help me?" You remember what Jesus says to her? "You're worried about a lot of stuff, Martha. But there's only one thing that matters. And Mary had found it at the feet of Jesus," which is where our kids, where everyone finds it too. But it's where we need to bring them. We get consumed with all this other stuff, brothers and sisters, worried about all these other activities, when where kids need to be is at the feet of Jesus. So here's the straight talk. If I'm busy getting my kids to practice, but not as concerned about getting them to Bible class, I'm doing this wrong. And if I'm all concerned about the upcoming band competition, but not about the upcoming event that we've designed once a year just for kids, I'm doing this wrong. And when I am consumed with the SAT scores, but I am not consumed with being sure my kids know how to study the Bible, hear me on this. We're doing this wrong. That isn't the stuff that matters. What will matter when they die? That's what needs to matter now. So if I could make a couple of practical suggestions about that. Number one, talk that talk with your kids. My kids played baseball for a decade. Sometimes we care too much about that. But at least we did try to say the right things. And so what we said about baseball over and over again was, we do this for fun. And if there ever comes a time where this isn't fun for you anymore, then we won't do it anymore. I never thought they would take me up on that, but they did. And then finally, if this ever gets in the way of doing what we need to do for the Lord, it goes away. Say that to your kids over and over again. And then number two, relish the opportunities to demonstrate that. Sometimes I think we get mixed up on this. Listen, it is great when there is a conflict between band or sports and some spiritual thing that's going on. It's an opportunity to say, "Let me show you what matters." Yeah, we're not going to be at that game. We have Bible class. Yeah. Use it as a chance to tell kids what really matters. Let's stop saying that Jesus is most important. And let's show them to do it. It's a challenge for us. We care too much about this other stuff. And number three, I need to say to you today, because I started here, that screens are a problem, and they are, aren't they? I started at this point to just cite a bunch of statistical data. I was working on this sermon last week, and I thought, I'm going to give them some data on this. And then I paused and thought, I don't need to do that. Y'all already believe this, right? The screens are a problem. And on a lot of different fronts, there is the time factor. We are consumed looking at screens every day. Our kids are really caught up in that, like more than 8 hours of their day on average looking at screens. Think about that. That's like more than a third, half of their waking time. And it isn't just that they're looking at screens. It's what they might see when they look there. And we know that problem too. There is a lot of stuff out there that they could look at that is not good. Everything from pornography to some atheist video on YouTube trying to undermine their faith. And we worry about that stuff. And yet, oddly enough, brothers and sisters, in culture, very, very few parents are doing anything to hold their kids accountable. They have sent them out into the digital Wild West and don't even make sure that they're protected when they go. We just turn them loose. When's the last time you pulled the phone out, their phone out, went to the history and skimmed down through it to see what was there? Are our kids absolutely unaccountable in this? Lord's concerned about every bit of that. In Ephesians 5, in verse 15, Paul urged, therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. God cares about time. Proverbs 4 and verse 23 warns, watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. God is concerned with the protection of the heart, the fountain from which everything else comes. And listen, as parents, God holds us accountable to keep up with what they're seeing and discipline them about the use of all these things. But I think we all know that. We just need to do something about it. You know who's inspired me about this? Brandon Knapp, who I now just freaked out because he had no idea. He had no idea I was going to talk about him today. And he doesn't have any idea how he's inspired me about this. Does some of y'all follow him on Facebook? Usually what that means you're treated to some really lame attempts at humor. But one thing I've noticed as I've followed Brandon is periodically he says, I'm not going to see you for a month. I'm taking a break. And I saw that, Brandon, and I thought, that's such a good idea. Just take a break. And so he's inspired me that way. I've tried to do that. I used to get up first thing in the morning and check email, like it won't be there in an hour, right? So I just don't do that anymore. I don't grab my phone or my iPad first thing in the morning. I just let it sit. And the other thing I do is I just find pause moments in my day where I set this stuff aside. I was working on this sermon last week, inspired by Brandon, just set the phone aside, turned off the notifications on the computer, and I just wrote a sermon for a couple of hours. And nobody died. And the world didn't come to an end. I did have to answer a few texts when I got done and return a few calls, and you were okay with that too. And so I've wondered if perhaps we really impact our kids on this only after we first take a long, hard look in the mirror, yes? And managed our own screen time better. And then invite our kids to join us in that. Maybe a good idea around the house to have a period of the day that's just a no device portion of the day. Go put the phone away, turn off the TV, and maybe let's just have dinner together and sit in the awkward silence, right? No, learn to talk to each other again. That's a pretty cool thing. Or some time in the evening where the devices go away and the book gets open and we read from the prophets. I told you I wasn't going to leave that alone. And maybe urge your kids in the same way, like Brandon does, to take a fast from social media. If nothing else to teach them, you can lay off Facebook for a month and still be breathing at the end of it. Brandon is with us in the back today, working the sound. Isn't that a surprise? And perhaps along the way to undergird that with some Ephesians 5. Make the most of your time. It's a Proverbs 4. Guard your heart. The truth is, brothers and sisters, we all know it's a problem. We gripe and complain about it all the time. For the sake of our kids, we need to start doing something. Get out of the cultural box. Be different. You're going to love it today, Jeff. It's 10:59. I have one whole point to go. Can I have like 5 more minutes? Will y'all hang with me? This next one's kind of different, but I just think it's really important. I want to throw it in. The last thing I want to say to all of us is we need to be challenged to remember that they are watching. They are watching us. Both of my sons have had a season of their life where they were preaching, and periodically people who had heard them would come to me and compliment their preaching, and they would say something like, "I could really see you in them." I don't know how they felt about that, but I took that as a compliment, and I think that's how it was intended. And I like that, right? You do too as a parent, where your kids do good stuff that you know was something they picked up along the way growing up in your house, right? That's a good thing. We enjoy that as parents. And it balances the other side of that, right? And that's when you see your kids doing things that aren't good and realize, yeah, they probably picked that up from me too. Have you had that moment? Years ago when our children were very small, we were sitting in traffic, which you know was a problem for me up front, right? We were sitting in traffic, I was behaving, everybody was quiet, and all of a sudden this little 5-year-old voice from the back seat pipes up and said, "Come on, buddy, get going." And then the car got deafeningly silent for about 10 seconds. And I looked over at Heidi and I said, "I wonder where he picked that up." And she gave me that look that wives sometimes give their husbands, because we knew he had picked it up sitting in the back seat watching Dad drive. Is it that terrible when that happens? It does. Kids learn a lot about life. Not even from what we say. I think they learn so much more about life just because they're watching Mom and Dad do life. And in the more narrow focus that I have this morning, I think they learn a lot about serving God by watching Mom and Dad serve God. And so I've been telling my prodigals class that I don't think parents determine what happens with their kids. I think ultimately everybody makes their own choice about God, but we are participants in the process. We get to contribute to our kids' thinking about spiritual things, and not even just by what we say and teach, as Deuteronomy 6 and verse 7 says, but even just by the way we live in front of them. In fact, if I could stretch that out a bit, it really extends beyond Mom and Dad, and it actually touches all of us who are sitting in this church building this morning. As these kids grow up as part of the Kleinwood church family, they're watching. In fact, I have been astonished over the years at who the kids have identified that they're watching. I mean, sometimes just some random person that you never would have imagined had caught their eye and in some way made an impact on them. What they see from us will form the baseline of what they understand about church family. Kleinwood will be for them what all church family is like. So it's interesting, back in Deuteronomy, before you get to verse 7, and he says, talk about this when you sit in your house. Before he gets to that, he first says in verse 5, love the Lord your God with all your heart. And then he says in verse 6, these words shall be on your heart. Isn't it interesting? Before he says, before you teach anybody, take that long, hard look in the mirror. And so I think we should ponder that. What do my kids learn about serving Jesus as they look at me serve Jesus? What do they learn about praying? Or the value of reading the prophets? Last time I'll mention that. What did they figure out about the importance of these gatherings from our commitment together, or from the lack of commitment of brothers and sisters together? Think about that around 4 o'clock this afternoon, will you? What did they learn about serving under church leaders and respecting them? What did they learn about how I treat people who wound me? What do they pick up in the way of passion about sharing this wonderful news with people who don't know it, sharing the gospel? What do they learn about apologizing when I'm wrong? What do they learn about doing church family? I really am not saying any of that because I want to make you feel guilty this morning. That's not the point. I think probably all of us could say, there are things I wish I modeled better before my kids or before the young people in this church. I get that. I know we all can feel that way about something. But what's more important to me is that we all be inspired by the opportunity. Think about it. We can help our kids to learn about serving Jesus just by serving Jesus in front of them, modeling what it means to follow him. Because they're watching. Maybe for somebody that will mean that there's something you need to do right now, this morning. Maybe there's some of us that look at our lives and we just think, I've not lived that. I've not been that. Maybe I've just been sort of wallowed in mediocrity, functioning out on the fringes, and have not been a disciple of Jesus. And what I'd like to say to my own kids and the kids in this church family is, that isn't the way you do it. Let me show you how to do it. You come back to him, he receives you, and you serve him. What a wonderful message to send to your kids. Or maybe you've never obeyed the gospel. Maybe there's somebody sitting in the crowd today that shows up for church but has never decided, what I'm going to do is let Jesus clean me up, and what I'm going to do is walk with him and follow him and live for him. What a wonderful message to send to your kids about what really does matter in life. So it's an opportunity right now, maybe for somebody, to do what is right. And in doing that, to show your kids how to do what's right. So, if you need to do that, God invites you and we welcome you. You make your way to the front right now, while we stand, while we sing.
Thank you for participating in today's worship service presented by the Kleinwood Congregation of the Church of Christ. You can listen again to today's service on our website, kleinwood.com.